You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I know you'll be alright, even when times get hard and you feel like you're in the dark. You will see just how beautiful life can be when you soften your heart. You can finally start to live your truth. Life.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Truthiest Life. It's your host, Lisa Haim. And a little intro before we get into this week's episode, where I'm sharing my top tips of what helped me take parenting in toddlerhood from complete chaos and overwhelm to calm and perhaps even joy. Before I do, I just want to let you know that this past week we kicked off Mind Body Mentorship. It's my new program just for the month of March, where we meet live twice a week as a group and we practice mindfulness, go over mindfulness concepts, meditate, journal together. And then we also have the somatic component on Sundays that includes yoga, movement, breath work, but in a way that is pairing it all together. The purpose of this program is to create a safe space for spiritual growth and learning, nervous system regulation, that's absolutely key, and for embodied wisdom to arise. It pairs a top-down approach, mindfulness and meditation, with a bottom-up approach, think movement and breath work, to release the blockages, rewire the nervous system, and reconnect to your true self. It's done in a group setting, which expedites the process, makes it fun, and really creates a nourishing environment where we can actually drop in deeper and deeper and create a connection that lasts. I shared all about this program in my last episode, but this week it kicked off, and oh my gosh, did it blow my mind in the sense that I felt proud of me for the first time in a long time. I know that the second I signed on to the first session and I saw all the faces and the chat started going and people started sharing, it felt like I really listened to my gut, my intuition. I didn't let things get in my way when creating this. I didn't worry about how many people would sign up, how much money I would make, too much going into even the marketing that went into it. I did that all myself, all the branding. And it just like came together really beautifully. And I think it's a testament to what the program actually is. When we're in mind-body connection, when we're connected to our source, that creative, powerful, forward-moving version of ourself, things flow. When we are not, things don't flow. And it went so beautifully. I've heard from so many incredible people that this is like exactly what they needed. And I think it's what a lot of us need. So just because it kicked off does not mean that you've missed the boat. You can still sign up. I'll put the link below. And you can join all our future sessions, which include every Sunday and Tuesday for the rest of March. You also have the option to do the drop-in where you just kind of test it out. If you know you don't want to do a Tuesday and you can only make it to one Sunday, go ahead and do the drop-in option. For the most part, the membership is probably going to be the most financially smart move, because if you attend two sessions, it ends up being less money for the entire membership. So if it's speaking to you, I just want to make sure that you know you didn't miss the boat. We want you. And this is March only. It will definitely not be offered in April, probably not May. April is Camp Meetreat. Oh my gosh, a month away. A lot of exciting things are coming through me. And it feels really good to be in my spiritual and serving seat. I'm really like anchoring into that, not just because it's what I want to do, but because it's how I feel my best. And I also happen to be a girl that loves Love is Blind, and a new season came out and I'm dying to watch it. But I know that if I head in that direction, not that there's anything wrong with that, but that show sucks me in so dirty that I can't afford to watch it right now. So I'm putting that on hold until maybe after the Meetreat, when I just need like my brain to just kind of like out, give it a rest. But right now I'm in the driving seat and I want to really contain that connection and dive a little bit deeper because it feels so good to be serving in a way that is completely aligned with me. If this program is offered again, there will probably be an evolution of it, but that's what we've got right now. So I'll put that link below. Moving into this week's episode, I had this worry after I recorded it that I came from this like holier than now place where like, I've got it all figured out and this is what you should do. And I listened back and I don't think that's how I come across, but I'm going to put an extra disclaimer here that this is what's working for us. It felt so empowering to shift the way I see babies, toddlers, and the whole philosophy around raising them. I'm somebody that felt completely disempowered when I had a baby. Like, though I still had my intuition, I was so nervous that I had no idea what to do. As a toddler mom, I feel so much more empowered, trusting of my intuition, and grateful that these like pathways have opened up that have showed me that there's more than one way to do things. I think with babyhood, I didn't feel that way. With toddlerhood, I do. And I just want to put that extra asterisk that I in no way have it all figured out. I absolutely lose my cool sometimes. I get extra stressed out, overwhelmed, exhausted. I don't know if any of that came through in the episode, so I just want to make sure that that's here too. I'm also going to make sure to put the two resources that I mentioned a bunch of times in the show notes, which is Janet Lansbury, her podcast, her website. She has courses that you can find within that. And the book Hunt, Gather, Parent. There are tons of other resources out there, but I feel like the two of these found me at the right time and really expanded my brain and my capabilities to be patient, feel empowered, and really do things differently. I said this in the episode, but I want to say it one more time. When you make change in your life and it starts to be not just like cognitive change, but like DNA changes, like you believe what you're doing so much, there's also the backside of this coin that is not often talked about, which is you will be really frustrated in other settings when you don't see this model being done to other children or your own child, more importantly. I do not believe that there's one right way to do anything, but when it comes to these philosophies, which I believe are largely rooted in respectful parenting, it can be really hard when it's your own child and there are grandparents or another parent involved or other caregivers that aren't speaking to your child the same way. And it's not to say they're doing anything wrong, but there are these like little things that you don't realize that are not aligned with who you are. So any change comes with a shift from the other side, and you have to become a really good communicator to get people on board, to manage your own emotions. And again, just highlighting the complexities of being a mother, being a parent, evolving, sticking to your wisdom, sticking to your truth, and learning how to do so while you're exhausted. Okay, that's this intro, a little bit long, but I'm going to put everything I just talked about in the show notes below. And I hope this episode, where I shared almost 14 changes that I've made, really helps you feel empowered, gives you tools to call on, because that I think is the most important thing when it comes to toddler motherhood, in my limited experience. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I'll see you soon. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Truthiest Life. It's your host, Lisa Haim, and I know I said I'd be irregularly popping back in, and this is one of these moments that I want to irregularly pop in. This is such a wonderful platform to provide information and make it accessible to all and communicate it in a way that is very natural for me. And admittedly, I've gotten caught up in sharing on here because as a non-perfectionist, something I'm very proud of, I've always brought a little bit of perfectionist nature to this podcast. I don't know why. It has always felt really important when using my actual like voice from my body to deliver information in a way that is said really, really well. And obviously that's important with all forms of communication, but it can also come to a point where it becomes an obstacle because there's no way to say things absolutely perfect all the time. For whatever reason, when I communicate on Instagram and social media, it has always flowed through me the way I would kind of like write in a journal and fearlessly hit send. And I wouldn't even call it fearlessly because it didn't feel fearlessly. It just felt such an extension of me and it was so natural. And as easy as it is for me to speak and use my voice, when you sit down with a microphone, things kind of change. And I'm 3 years in, and yes, I'm more comfortable, but I still get stuck on the same obstacles. And having gone back to social media for about 4 weeks now, I'm back, but today specifically is like a recalibration day for me, where I'm asking myself questions, which way do I want to go, instead of just cruising in the direction that I am. Yesterday was probably the most powerful full moon I've ever seen. I don't know if any of you noticed. Yesterday was February 25th, and it like took me to the point where I was Googling about this full moon, and everything about this specific moon said like, now is the time to be introspective and go inward and see what you really need. And I kind of felt annoyed by that because I have been reflecting for months and months, and now it's like, oh, now is the time to reflect, where it's like, I am really tired of reflecting. A part of me wants to be back in motion, and reflecting is the stopping point and often where we pivot. But better me, bigger me, higher me knows that if we don't listen to those pulls that we have to go inward and we want to just keep going because we're afraid of what we'll find, we will find ourselves in a worse place down the line. So I just got back from 7 days of vacation. So grateful for that time with my family. 7 days is a lot of time to be away for me. And it's a lot of time for me to be disconnected from my practices, especially the ones that have been so life-changing in the last 6 to 8 months that have really helped me refind my whole, my center, live a much less of an egorific life, less of an adrenalated life, all of that. When it comes to these practices, yoga, pranayama, meditation, journaling, I am of the mindset of it doesn't need to be perfect. We just have to return back to it because perfection is what personally trips me up. And it kind of previously, historically, has thrown me into like throw in the towel mode where it's like, okay, well, I don't do these practices anymore. And then I don't return to them because my streak is over. I used to talk about that a lot with healthy eating and diet mentality. It's like, okay, you were eating really healthy and then you had the ex that you no longer think is healthy. So you say, I blew it, and continue down the trajectory of I blew it, instead of just like, just get back to what feels good and is nourishing for your body. A little tangential there, but I think the same thing can happen with fitness, spirituality, and the things that actually make us feel good. Fortunately, I've stuck with these practices for long enough that I love them and I want to come back to them, which made coming back to it this morning, there was an obstacle still. Like, it's not part of my routine. I haven't been back to my pranayama setup in a week and a half. But once I dropped in, like, my body knew what to do. And it felt so nice to find stillness and settling after what was an amazing vacation with my family. So much love, so much good food, so much doing, so much heart-filling moments. But it was also a lot of energy expenditure. And the second I lied down and allowed my, I do pranayama first and then a little bit of meditation, which if people are interested, and I would like to share more of that, I'll get into down the line. Oh, it just feels so good to settle back into your truth. And yet it's so much easier to keep going with what you're doing otherwise, even if you know that it's not your healthiest. The habits, the things that produced serotonin and oxytocin and dopamine, but aren't necessarily the best things for you. I hope I'm being clear with that. But today I'm showing up because there's been a topic on my mind that I am obviously not an expert in motherhood. I am a first-time mom with a 2.5-year-old. But I think what I see in myself different than a lot of people that I know is that I am obsessed with being a toddler mom. I find it so fascinating to study their minds and watch them and observe and tweak the things that I do or I say and see how she, my daughter, reacts. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about is helping mothers maybe see that it can be more fun and playful and delicious. And yes, it is absolutely exhausting on so many fronts. And there's so many dead ends where like life feels absolutely impossible. And like, what do I even do with my child? And like, there's just so many of those moments where you just want to throw up your hands. But I think that if we fill in the other moments with more joy, a lot of the things that feel daunting are really good and healthy for us. This summer, in particularly when I went off Lyme, I feel like I got really lucky with her age and the literature and people that fell into my life that armed me, if you will, with like tools that I didn't have prior to be a really good mom. And by that, I mean present, attuned to her, willing to try new things, recognize my own things that I was doing that I wasn't, that weren't feeling right to me, and make pivoting choices to try new things. Going offline, taking a break from work, all of that felt like a beautiful time to be like, how can I step into this role? Many of you know that baby life was really challenging for me. And I look back now and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea. And me having no idea made me so reliant on other people around me that I thought were experts. And sure, maybe they could help me. But a lot of the times it wasn't in truth with how if I have another child, I will be with baby. I've just learned so much through this phase of toddler life that applies to babyhood. So I also just want to say, if you're listening to this at any age of motherhood, I think that it will be really helpful to really think about things differently.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant... Just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
So the two most, I think, critical people books things in my life that kind of emerged at the same time. And I want to first credit my friend Leah, who has three kids under six, and we met actually by way of the internet. She had a burner account that she used to message me from, to the point where I thought this person was creepy and I almost blocked them. I might have like restricted them, which is a function. And then I ended up meeting her in real life at a restaurant, and this woman has become my best friend over the last couple of years. Like, I travel to California to see her. We go on family vacations, and she's so wise when it comes to motherhood, and she's doing things so differently. So she's the one that introduced me to this woman, Janet Lansbury, who you may or may not be familiar with. And whenever I have a question about Soli, I always like check it with her, and she has such an interesting response that I wouldn't have thought of. And I think that this age, or any age in general, like having tools to navigate hard times makes you feel so much more empowered as a parent. And then that allows for less burnout or less like shame. I think a lot of us feel shameful when we can't get our kid to stop crying, we can't get them to sleep, when we can't figure out why they're hitting or why they're not eating their food, right? Like, we can cycle a vicious cycle very quickly that's hard to get out of. But if you feel like you just have one tool in your pocket, whether it's a phrase to say differently or just anything, it goes so far in feeling empowered and like you got this. And you do have to feel like you got this as a mother, because you are the safe space for your child. And that's something that's really important for me. You know, in my own personal life, I work on resourcing, getting myself back to safety. But a child is completely codependent emotionally. And so I need to appear and be, you can't just appear, you have to be solid in your confidence in self, because otherwise the child gets that energy. So the two concepts, books, people, whatever, that have kind of emerged for me are, number one, respectful parenting, Janet Lansbury being the charge on that for me. Her practices come from Magda Gerber, but her podcast and her website, like, you can put in any topic that you're dealing with and she has written about it in a way that is so beautiful. And respectful parenting to me is the philosophy that lands the best with me, more than like intentional or conscious, and all of that is wonderful. But respectful really distills how I believe a child, a baby, a toddler, an adult, any person should be treated. And for some reason in our culture, whether we're dealing with babies that can't speak or elders that, you know, are less cognizant for aging reasons, we stop treating them respectfully. And it's very subtle, but once you see it or feel it, you can't unsee it. But we talk about them as if they're not there, right? Sometimes we talk to babies in like baby voices. We treat them differently. We don't tell them things that are happening in their life. We just do them quickly. And with elders, you could, you know, imagine the way that we treat elders in our society. But focusing on the babies for a moment, when I started reading about respectful parenting, I started to have a lot of regrets about things that I did in the baby life. And specifically, you know, Soli is a child that gets very, very high fevers, and medicine has been how I have to keep them at bay, because she's been hospitalized twice, history of febrile seizures, and I get very triggered by her fevers. She has also, at the same time, of course, hates medicine. So many times I had to force medicine into her, whether that was like by mouth, trying to like sneak an attack through these like pacifier things where you stick the liquid in, or suppositories. You know, it's really, really challenging. And I'm like rubbing my eyes as I say this because I feel so stressed about it. It was one of those crux in parenting where I was like, I need to take care of you, but you're not letting me take care of you. So I have to get it into you. And of course, going back, you still have to get the medicine in. But the respectful thing is to tell them everything that's happening to them, from I'm going to be changing your diaper to just talking to them. I think a lot of people have babies and they think they can't understand, so I'm not going to talk until they could talk, or making like made up words. But I know I talk to her a lot, but I also kind of like expended my energy too hard in the wrong places. I would just make sure to tell her everything that was ever going to happen to her, from going to the doctor and shots and all of that. I think it's really important to find your fine line of telling them without like, and it's going to be scary and it's going to hurt. Like, you don't want to do that, but you want to be like the strong place. So just an example of what respectful parenting means to me is really treating them as you would another human being. Yeah, Janet Lansbury, huge, amazing resource for that. You can find so much free materials. At the same time, I stumbled upon a book called Hunt, Gather, Parent. I still, to this day, I don't think I've made it through 50% of this book, but what I took away from the 50% changed my life. And again, it's about having those tools. And I think that I found this book and really started to shift the way I parent at the exact right time. She was a little under two, shifting into like toddlerhood, and things were getting a lot harder. Quote unquote, meltdowns were ensuing, and I didn't know how to support her and help her and how to do it. I wanted to put a huge asterisk here that changing the way you see toddlers and babies and seeing them as human beings is not 100% cherry pie. It actually is really, really hard because you can't unsee the way other people do it and the way other people speak to your child, whether that's grandparents, other caregivers in their life. And you start to get really uncomfortable when other people are not doing it as you want them to be because they're not being respectful. So this has also been really challenging for me in my home life, even with Evan, the other caregiver, my husband, because it's like I'm changing the way I'm doing it. I'm seeing all the benefits in the way. And then how do I communicate that in a way to him without me telling him what to do? Things I've been navigating for 6 months. And I just want to put that caveat here that once you get what I call Janet Lansbury'd, like it's very hard to be Janet Lansbury'd. And then it also gets even harder because, in my opinion, the way children are treated in our culture in very subtle ways is a little bit abusive. And I don't mean abusive that the parents need to be jailed. Even the things that I did, I would say, are abusive in some way, just not treating them like people. That's what I define as abusive. So take that with a grain of salt, but it's very hard to unsee once you see it. This book, Hunt, Gather, Parent, and really immersing myself in Janet Lansbury's podcast, books, all of that, were really transformative to me. So I wanted to include a list of things that I have done, changed my mindset on, that have made parenting so much more joyful and so much easier. I think that, and this is largely informed by Hunt, Gather, Parent, we have this idea as Americans in our culture and our society that like it's about control and our kids have to behave. And if they misbehave, they're not listening to us. And then we go like so far into the distance about like what kind of adults they're going to be, when in reality, like children are children, their brains are forming. And sometimes they do things that are not behaving, but it's not necessarily the time or the exact moment to like be the disciplinarian. It's a time to show love and educate and do so in a way that recognizes this is their first time here doing this, that. And I think we get carried away with the story of like what kind of people they're going to become if we don't discipline them. And I don't know, in my limited experience, I've found an opposite approach to be just so much more helpful. So breathe easy, everybody, like parents, moms, dads, like allow for knowing that your child will grow into a beautiful person. Grow into a beautiful adult. They are a person. See, I tripped up there. If we treat them like people and we don't make it about control and authoritarian ways of controlling the situation, you have to treat them a little bit more like equals. So one of the things that immediately made my life so much easier was including her in stuff. Like I said, this found me at the perfect age. Two, almost two, becomes an age where they really want to help. They want to sweep. They want to do dishes. And obviously they can't do them as well as we can, but we can include them in those things more than we think. Obviously not with knives and unsafe things, but they can definitely like have this little, like it's called the tower that goes by the sink, and having her next to me do the dishes is much easier than me putting her in front of a screen or in front of toys and saying play alone. I think that like we also oftentimes think that they need to be occupied while we do our things, but I found that including her in stuff, getting her a little broom, like a real one, like a little sweeping pan, actually allowed for so many things to be easier. And they're also learning that they're part of the responsibility in the house. And I find that part to be really interesting too. And Hunt Gather Parent talked about it a lot, is we come up with these like reward systems of like, if you help me do this, then you get a star. But then we're not really teaching our children to be active helpers around the house, to look for what needs to be done. We're teaching them how to simply do a chore because it needs to get done. What I want to raise is somebody who is helpful. And they talk about this concept called accommodito in the book, which she travels to different cultures and sees how they do things. And the idea is how to be helpful without having to point out, this is what I need help with. And that's such a beautiful skill to have, especially in the world where we're sucked in by our phones and easily distracted and in our heads, to raise somebody that wants to help because they see that something needs to be done. So I highly recommend including your children in your chores that you have to do around the house. Energy saving. I talked about this a little bit earlier, but I feel like I expended so much energy in the beginning by thinking that I had to entertain her, talk so much. Sportscast, as Janet Lansbury describes it, which is like, oh, you're building the block so high, and this is the red one and this is the purple one, and every second just like speaking about what they're doing because they need to be educated. We don't have to do that. Yes, we can be their educators and assist and point things out at certain times, but we don't need to be an actor in this life. And the most beautiful gift that Janet Lansbury and my friend Leah have given me is to observe and notice how much you want to jump in, whether they're doing something quote unquote wrong or you just want to say good job, right? Like, just listen, just sit back and observe more and more. And it's a skill that I'm constantly refining, especially the good job one. Good job, I feel like that's its own bullet point here. Of course, we want to build self-esteem and applaud them, but saying good job, first of all, becomes just this like word that we're throwing out all of the time and not with true meaning. But it also can turn them into little bits of performers. So they're doing a good job for the applause instead of just doing the thing that they need to do. Obviously, it's kind of a tricky one because I do believe in celebrating them, and it's so fun when you see their self-esteem growing. But I think that like good job after everything that we say is such a knee-jerk reaction that it's one that can be called back and also a place to just observe. On that note, I think it's been really freeing to not correct everything that she does. So if she looked, you know, over time, if she looks at the color, you know, purple and she calls it blue, I'm not like, no, this is purple. Like, she's learning her colors. And yes, there's opportunity at times to correct or share what is right, what is, you know, the right way of doing it, or the right exact, you know, color or number or whatever. But there's also a time to just be like, just sit back, let her call it that. She's not going to go to college and call it purple bread. It's not even going to make it to elementary school knowing that. And so just like really trusting that bigger picture process that they are going to learn it and we don't need to step in every step of the way has been really, 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 really freeing for me. And it is a form of respect, right? Like when people misspeak or misspell and we call out everything that they do, that is rude. It's not how you would treat a person. Hopefully you wouldn't, at least. And the same kind of applies here. There are teaching moments and there are non-teaching moments. Hitting and hurting. That's one in our house that has been, I wouldn't call it a problem, but has happened on occasion. And Leah, oh my gosh, my best friend, equipped me with like the best sentence to say, because if you start to scold or ridicule or say, no, don't do that, right? Like, oftentimes they find it funny, and that can actually send both of you into a vicious, it can send me into like this vicious loop of like, she thinks it's funny that she's hitting me. She can't know that she's hitting me. She can't go to school and hit people. And you run again, like so far into the distance that you miss what's happening in the moment. And I remember one night Soli was hitting me, and I didn't know what to do. And I was getting mad because first of all, it was hurting. I think she was pulling my hair, and it was like, how do I get her to stop? I'm using my words. It's not working. And I ran back what I did to my friend Leah, and I can't remember exactly what I did, but she's like, so what I would do is I would, you know, let her know that really hurts my body. If you do it again, I'm going to have to remove my body from you to keep myself safe. Or if she's like throwing a toy, right, I'm going to have to put this toy away to keep everybody safe. And you say it calm, and you say it with truth and with confidence, but you don't say it with like a punishing tone. I don't say it with a punishing tone. And after that first time of I have to remove my body, and I'd walked out of the room, you know, put her in a safe place. I think at the time she was in a crib, so placed her in her crib and said, I have to leave the room to keep my body safe. You know, I left for a minute, two, like maybe less, an earshot away from her. And you come back, you know, you have to come back. You don't want to make them feel fearful of that. But this sentence alone has been like, it's in my pocket at all times as we go through toddlerhood. And I really, really like it. So I wanted to offer it to you. Keep my body safe, keep people safe, all of that. And it's not in a threatening tone. It's not in a punitive tone, but it's in a matter of a fact tone. It's really important too, as I believe Janet talks about, when you are going through a hitting situation, it has to be like addressed in that moment, not many minutes after you kind of like lose the momentum. And I've also found, and this is just something that I personally do, and we haven't had any issues with her doing anything in public settings to other kids or anything, but I sometimes recognize that she's really tired and what she is doing is not a reflection of what she knows to be right or wrong. I think that a lot of what is so hard about toddlerism is that if they're napping or they're not and their sleep cycles are messed up and they are really overtired. And at the same time, they have these new gross motor skills and fine motor skills. They can pick up a ball and throw it, right? Like a baby can't. And so sometimes it's just like they're firing wrong. And I see that and I feel that. And if I know she's really exhausted and we're getting to bedtime, it's not the time to have the conversation about hitting. I don't know. That's my personal philosophy and it seems to kind of work for us. But I kind of just recognize like this is not you at your best or your high knowing. This is like you need to get to sleep. And I think this window of toddlerism is really a large window of a lot of them not getting a lot of sleep, whether they're going to daycare or schools or programs. We're starting to put them on like regular human life schedules and they're not necessarily ready for that or they're not ready for it every day. One of the moms at pickup, I was talking to her about it, and a lot of the kids Soli's age are, you know, she's 2.5. A lot of the kids in her grade, if you will, her class are 3. And so they're dropping that last nap and Soli rarely has it, but she does have it some days. She has low sleep needs compared to most kids is what I've learned, unfortunately, but unfortunate for me, I should say. And the thing is like we make these decisions and then they're kind of like permanent-ish or around here. That's how people do it. It's like, okay, we drop the nap. Now the toddler doesn't nap. But in reality, it's like some days a toddler needs a nap. Sometimes they don't. But because we're trying to get them back on our schedules and it's have a plan and a routine that we fail to realize that they're still going through these huge leaps. And some days they're tired and some days there's not. Just because we decided to cut their nap because we thought it was appropriate one day doesn't mean that it's appropriate all days. So I think that just like really recognizing that they get tired, they get overtired easily. And that's usually when I see the most quote unquote problems in our house. And therefore, those aren't the ones that I choose to correct. Again, it's just like freeing energy for me to know that like I recognize she's overtired and that I don't need to like worry so much about if she's a hitter or a hair puller, all of that. That being said, during daytime normal hours, if we are going through something, that's where I'm going to, you know, have the discussion with her. And she's learning at school a lot too, you know, no hitting, no biting. They learn all of that and she understands it. We never ever hit. We never ever bite. We never ever. It's really, really, really cute. But she understands the concept without having it be punitive. Punishments don't land with me. When I was pregnant, I never thought like, oh, am I going to be a parent that punishes or doesn't punish? And now that I'm here, that just doesn't sound right for me. I know as a child how punishments made me feel, especially like going to my room or timeouts. Like it didn't work well for me. It didn't make me feel safe. It didn't make me feel hurt. It didn't teach me a lesson. I absolutely do not subscribe to hitting or harming of a child to get them to listen. I know that that is still unfortunately happening, which literally hurts my soul to think about because of all these reasons of like I'm talking about. A child just can't advocate for itself. It can't tell anybody that, a toddler, a baby. That is for another topic that I will never probably discuss on here, but that really hurts me. I also believe in telling them everything that's happening. Like I said in the beginning, like if I could go back and talk more to her about, I'm going to change your diaper and all these little things that are happening to their bodies and their things that I might have been singing to her or doing other like nice pleasantries. But I think informing them of the what's happening to their bodies and what's happening at all times is really important. Balancing that with not sports casting and not burning yourself out. I think that it's really hard as a parent. And one of the things that I've adjusted to is finding a rhythm of talking to them that doesn't feel absolutely exhausting and doing so in a way that makes sense for you. Apologizing.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Apologizing. I think a lot of times we want our kids to say sorry, and yet we're not saying sorry. So when I have my breaking moments, or I do something in a way that just doesn't feel right, I apologize to her. I don't believe I read this one in either of the books or people that I mentioned, but it's something that I feel is not really reflected in my life with lots of people. And it's something that I think is really important for them to hear. And it's not mommy sorry, it's I'm sorry. Piggybacking on that is talking in the third person. Obviously, there's a time and a place for a baby and to learn, like, saying their name and saying your name or your mommy loves you, or daddy loves you, or mommy loves Soli, or does Soli want something to eat, or Soli do want this, or Soli. But they learn their name pretty fast. And then we can transition to you. Do you want something to eat? Instead of mommy loves you, I love you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I hurt you. Not mommy sorry that you hurt Soli, right? Do you hear the ownership in the difference in the ownership as I say that? This is just something that feels right to me. And I hope that it's important, because also when I say I'm sorry, I'm really owning whatever I did or didn't do or felt that I didn't do correctly. And the emotion is really behind that in a way that feels much more powerful. And more than words, what do we all respond more to? Energy. And when energy is backed by real emotion with ownership, I mean, there's nothing more powerful. And that applies to adulthood relationships as well. I guess that could be a whole other topic, right? But you get what I'm saying there. Next is singing. We have had the privilege to go to a Waldorf school. She doesn't go full-time to a Waldorf, but Waldorf starts at 3 actually for school. But we go to this parent-child class thing on Saturdays, and it's a 2-hour class. And I feel like, again, I could go into a whole other topic about how incredible this program has been for me, for her, for us. But what I have taken away most from this program is how much toddlers love repetition. And you go there, you do the same thing, and a lot of the different things that you do, whether it's rolling the bread, baking the bread, cleaning the table, there's a song for each thing. And they're really nice songs. And Soli loves them. And Evan loves them, and I love them. And I started to realize the power of repetition and song to do things. And songs are really important for me especially when doing the hard stuff. And last night I was doing one of my songs and Evan goes, did you make that one up? And I go, yeah. And he goes, I think that's like your best work as a parent. And I really think that it might be. And I have two songs that really get us through hard times. And the songs are about choices. And the other one is when she's going to school. And we'll talk about that one second. But I have a child that is really knows what she wants and what she doesn't want. And I don't like to do things to her when she doesn't want to. But there are certain times in parenthood where you need to do things and you need to take the approach of, okay, well, this has to be done even though you don't like it. But I don't like that wording, right? I don't like, you don't like it, but we have to do it anyway. And sometimes when children are resisting, that's when we really put our back against the wall and we get frustrated and we start to amp up that we need to do this. You're not listening. And you throw up our arms, right? And when you sing, it's not just enjoyed by child, it's like enjoyed by you. It allows your nervous system to make this a fun thing. And singing and humming and all of this is so good for our nervous system. And if you make it a song that you like and everybody likes, it just changes it. So last night, and like many nights, she doesn't like to put on her pajamas, has to sleep in pajamas because it's cold. And or it's not cold, but you know, I don't want her to get cold in the night. Pajamas are a non-negotiable in our house. If I say it's a non-negotiable, that language is a little miss for her. So I came up with the choices song, which goes, there are choices and not choices, and this is not a choice. And then I'll maybe like branch out into what is choices. You know, you like chocolate or vanilla, or, you know, different things like that. But she knows when I start singing that song, like, time to participate in putting on your pull-up and your pajamas and all of that stuff. And she starts singing, and what starts as like could turn into a fight, resistance, completely exhaust me, just turns into this like fun activity where we're all singing, there are choices and not choices. So, you know, I was not a natural at any of this, like the singing, the songs, this. I felt so ridiculous when I stepped into motherhood. And now it feels so natural to me to come up with these songs. And I do come up with bangers, I admit it. But really, I think that like I've just like fallen into motherhood in a way that just it flows from me, and I allow for it to flow from me. Going to school, that was a big transition for us. But the part she doesn't like is me not coming. So I'd say, do you not want to go because you want to stay with me? And she would say, yeah. And I'd say, oh, I'd love to come. Thank you so much for inviting me. But camp is just for kids. So have so much fun and I'll pick you up when you're done. And it started to be like, oh, I'd love to come, but camp is just for, and then she'd say, kids. And I'd say, so have so much, and she'd say, fun. And I'd say, and I'll pick you up when you're, and she'd say, done. And it'd shift her mood. And while acknowledging that this is a hard transition. And I have another song in the car where a lot of mornings saying, I don't want to go to school. And I try not to probe, but I do sometimes say, is it because you want to stay home and play with your toys or play with mom? Whatever it is, I'd say it in one of those ways. And I'd say either I'd love to come or I'd love to be with you, but school or camp is just for kids. So have so much fun, whatever. And I always tell her if, like, you know, you're going through a hard time, your teacher will call me, you let her know. And again, just like communicating that, like, it is kind of scary to be dropped off somewhere and you have no connection to, right? She doesn't have a phone. She doesn't have a way to alert me, but letting her know that there is an alert system. And the same thing, you know, she just can get nervous on the line because a transition is coming up, the car line, have to drop her off on. And we have to wait on this line, which is so hard to do. It really builds up the leaving me process. So we come up with songs to sing and whatever it is. We sing about chickadees on our fingers, and it's not to distract her, but it's to, first of all, just regulate her a little bit because she's starting to get nervous. And it just totally changes like the dynamic for us while letting her know, I hear you and you're safe and I'm here. On that note, it's really fun to give them mantras. Another song that I came up was kind of a mantra one. Just, you know, I started to notice before she could use the word scared that she would feel scared when I, at night, if I was leaving her room, and I'd rub her chest or show her how to rub her chest. I'm doing it right now, like your palm over your chest. And I'd say, I am safe. I am whole. I am safe and I am whole. Tap, tap, tap. And we tap, tap, tap. And, you know, now she's old enough to sing that and she'll sing it with me. Or if she's feeling scared, she sings that too. And it was one of those things that I never expected to be such a hit. And more importantly, like such a beautiful tool for her to resource herself and know that she's feeling scared and like have something to do, to a tool in her toolbox, right? Like that's what I want to build for her, her own knowing that life is hard. It is scary. And I wish that I had any tools. Like, I didn't even start gathering my tools till I was like 25. And just to instill them early and on is really nice. And to recognize that, like, night is scary. Sleeping alone is scary. All those things, instead of don't be scared, right? Like, I am, just let her know that she's safe, and then also give her a tool to return to. And any mantras that work for you in your home, just don't be afraid to get a little bit silly with it. And honestly, it's a good one for me too. I use it sometimes when I'm feeling scared. Okay, going all in. I think this is such an important one. Yesterday we went to a huge play space, and I feel like me in my 20s is laughing at me in my 30s, because what was I doing in my 20s? Going to like boozy brunches, had no idea how to talk to kids. And me in my 30s, getting older, I'm like knees deep in a ball pit, chasing a child while like hunching over to fit in this jungle gym thing, whatever. And I think that the gift that I've given to myself is like going all in. She's in another class where the moms come and they help their babies like play on the bars and the other thing. And like, I'm on the bars with her and I'm having the silliest time. And it is really fun, but it's only fun because like I'm all in. My cell phone is tucked away, and it's like, this is where I'm at in life as a parent. And if you try to like be an adult and then a full, you know, high functioning adult, the serious one, and not be silly, I think that's where the crux kind of happens. When you go all in, you get your hands dirty, it is super liberating. And it's funny. I said to Evan, like, none of us wanted to be there yesterday. And Evan's like, I kind of liked being there. And I'm like, yeah, I did too. And that's because like our mindsets are like, this is where I'm at. Like, our Sundays are not about adulty things at this time. And obviously there's something also to be said about like just doing kid things. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But our focus is on her. And when we do kid focused activities, we go all in. And it's really, really, really makes it much easier than kind of being half in, trying to also do your work emails at the same time. You get frustrated by the kid stuff. But if you really say to yourself, this is the time when I'm with my child and I'm present for it, things really shift. And it's silly and it's fun. And again, it's just about like filling the gaps with making this as enjoyable as possible and reaping the benefits of the good parts, because there are also the really hard meltdowns and all of that. Monitoring urgency in your tone. This summer, I feel like we were like peak transitioning into toddlerhood, and I was really struggling with how to get things done that couldn't be done quickly. And I have really noticed how urgency is built into our tone. And I kind of would joke, like, if I had to write a book about toddlers, which I am not an expert, so that probably will not be happening, it would be called You Can't Rush a Toddler, because you cannot rush a toddler. They go at their own speed. You try to rush them, you only get set back further. So really building a lot of space and time into things, whether it's putting shoes on and all of that. Obviously, there are times where you have to get out the door, and there is, but it's really built into like, come on, let's do this quick. Let's go. And all that does is create terrible energy in my own body and a terrible relationship to time that I never want her to have. The times that I feel most free in my life is when time feels spacious. And the opposite is true when I feel rushed. Yet oftentimes we are rushing for no reason too, just because we think things are going to take a long time and let's just do it and get them done. But for a toddler, like, everything is part of the process: putting the shoe on, Velcroing it. And so really recognizing when urgency isn't there, how we put it in, and being mindful of that has been really helpful for me. And it's a part of that going all in thing is just like, this is where we're at in life. And so I'm going to move slower and things are going to take more time. But I really have to catch myself all the time with that language, because we live in an urgency culture. I think I'm at lastly here is that know that they need you and we need them. The other night I was putting her to sleep and I noticed how good it felt to be next to her. Like, the chemicals firing in my body felt so good. And I did not sleep train. I did not do cry it out. I have lost a lot of sleep over the last couple of years, and nothing to be said about if you did do that and you're home at, you know, however it works for you. But I started to just really realize that I'm so glad that so many of the things the books and the experts told me to do, I didn't do, both for me and for her. I think that mothers miss out a lot of the times on the good parts of parenting because of society's norms and things that we have to do, the sleep conversation in particular, when a lot of our rebalancing of hormones and neurotransmitters really come through being in close proximity to our children. And so I just want to encourage anybody, whatever stage you're in, to really tune in to how your body responds to the things that you're doing and you're not doing. And that applies to sleep or any topics. If anything that you're doing feels weird in your body or your mind, take a step back and recognize there might be a better way to do it, a better way, an easier way, a more fulfilling way, a way that feels better for you. That's what I mean. And it really takes zooming out a lot because we want to raise children wonderfully and we defer to experts for a lot of things. But the true expert lies in each and every one of us, knowing that our children are unique, we are unique, your situation is unique, your home is unique, your dynamics are unique, your living situations are unique. Everything is different and there is not a one size fits all. So doing what is best for you, even if everything I said in this episode does not resonate with you, then that might not be right for you, for your child, where they're developmentally at, where they're cognitively at. But I just wanted to share things that I feel like have really helped me lean into the hard parts of toddlerism, has been really soaking in the joys that come with them too. And looking back at all the things that I used to do and all the energy that I needlessly expended really comes to mind. I think respectful and joyful parenting really comes from being more of an observer. The last thing that I forgot to say is the importance of independent play. It's something that I'm working on more here, especially it's a little bit harder because Soli's an only child. And when her grandparents come over, I'm with her. We always think like she needs to be entertained or played with. But there's something really beautiful, as my friend Leah has taught me, and important about independent play, setting them up with something safe to do and having time for yourself and letting them know that you're here doing that if they need anything, but also giving them, you know, space to do so themselves. I think it just goes back again into that idea of children need to be entertained when really this is such a beautiful time for imagination and exploration and non-interference by way of adults. So those are my thoughts. I probably annoyed a lot of you because I know toddler life is really exhausting for a lot of people, and perhaps hearing that I enjoy it and love it most of the times annoys you the way maybe when I wish that I was really good with babies, the way other people, you know, other people just naturally were. But however this lands, thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the Truthiest Life and helping me get over my own obstacles for recording things that just feel good. Things do not have to be perfect, but I believe if they come from the heart and the soul and the moment that you are feeling that energetic rise, which I was today, you pour it out into the universe and hopefully it just makes somebody's life a little bit better. Thanks all for listening, and I'll see you back here on The Truthiest Life.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win! Unbelievable!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.